All right, Chris, if you had one wish for the open source community, what would it be?
The currency of open source is contribution. And I think not enough organizations, you know, contribute out there. They simply use. So my wish is for folks to join and support open source foundations and employ open source maintainers, so we ensure open source is sustainable for everyone.
Sounds amazing. All that and more on this episode of Transformers. What does transformation mean? And what can we learn from the leaders leading the way? Join me as I talk to technologists about business, transformation, technology, and just being human too. My name is Anne Fanai. I'm CIO and Vice President of Business Platform Transformation at IBM. And this is Transformers, a Think podcast. All right, Chris, I am going to dive in. We have known each other a really, really, really long time from when we were just babies starting our career. Mm-hmm. And you are now have a fancy title like I do, a CTO at the Cloud Native Computing Foundation. So What does that actually mean?
Yeah, no, we've definitely known each other way, way, way too long from when I was basically a Linux open source nerd to now. So, these days I'm CTO of the Cloud Native Computing Foundation, or known as CNCF in the industry. And it's, literally the open source home for modern infrastructure. And kind of what I mean here, like Cloud Native basically refers to technology that enables you to scale your business to meet the demands of your platform application. And then really the genesis of it came from kind of the internet scale Bay Area companies, or Google's, Facebook's, Netflix's of the world, of kind of the technology they use to scale to support their millions upon maybe billions of users, and to democratize that technology and open source it in a way to make it available so everyone could, benefit from it, not just a small subset of companies. And so CNCF has now grown, and we're about to celebrate our 10th year anniversary, next year. And, we are probably the largest open source, foundation outside of Linux Foundation itself. We host over 200 projects such as Kubernetes, Prometheus, Envoy, Istio, all these kind of big, large-scale projects that power basically the world. It's all most modern infrastructure these days is using some piece of CNCF open source technology, which is extremely wild, in my opinion. It's completely been a fun almost decade journey inside of CNCF.
One thing I'd be curious, you've lived in this world, as you said, for so long. Are there myths that persist in the open source world? I feel like, it's always been almost like a religious war, kind of, are you open source or proprietary? Are there myths that you find you're still trying to debunk?
Every day, there's the old, open source software, is written by people that live in their, parents, basement, hacking away, working on things, which, to be honest, 25 years ago, that was true. That was me, basically, still just before I got really employed and a job. But now it's completely not true at all. Things like Linux, Kubernetes, PyTorch, which powers, basically the AI revolution. These are all written by people with real jobs, employed by, multi-billion dollar, companies. So the majority of, let's call it, highly used critical open source software is full-time, employment, Red Hat, was famous for employing a lot of these, folks. There's GitLab, Google employs a ton of maintainers. I think Facebook is one of the largest companies or largest employers of Linux kernel maintainers. So I think that it's changed where, it's no longer kind of hobbyist novices, hacking away, in a basement, somewhere, to actually it's the fabric of corporate and product development these days. Almost something 90% of modern products are taking advantage of open source software in some way, depending how you kind of slice and dice it.
Now, and I'm curious, not just in your seat, but with all the other foundations you're working with, I feel like AI, the way I'm thinking about it is everyone was a tech company, everyone was an e-commerce company, now everyone's an AI company, right? How Is that putting an impact in unexpected ways in open source AI?
In our world, like with open source, like, you know, I mostly interact with developers, and, you know, developers I find are, I don't say inherently lazy, but, you know, they tend to be, are they? They're very efficient. Maybe the better word is efficient.
I think efficient's a really good word for it. It's like,
efficient's word, not lazy. Yeah. Not lazy. So,
well, it's sometimes like things, laziness drives efficiency. Let's be honest.
Exactly. Like, if I could go use a tool for like all these like coding assistant tools out there, and I could actually make it improve my, you know, workflow, or I could get stuff done faster. Hey, everyone's rewriting stuff in like Rustlang now. Like, I need to go like learn Rust potentially. Can this help me, you know, like learn Rust faster? So we're actually seeing a lot of, you know, AI use in terms of people like learning new languages, or, doing, essentially like automating their pull request queue management. So basically, hey, can I have, you know, tools and bots that kind of assist me to like prune down my queue, or try to automatically, fix issues, right? So it's I think developers are almost always at the like leading front of picking on like trends and tools. And, you know, even though AI is still, you know, on its kind of hype cycle march, developers were one of the first early, adopters of AI before, you know, students and kids figured out you could use like ChatGPT to cheat on your homework. Like developers almost always at like the leading front of doing this. And so, yeah, we're seeing it all over, open source land. I mean, some of the funny challenges, there's still kind of a lot of interesting like legal questions of like, did a robot write, like the robot wrote this, but where did the robot get inspired on to do this? So there's kind of a lot of interesting, you know, fun, like legal debates going on out there that we're, you know, wrestling with inside the CNCF and the Linux Foundation.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how the next few years evolve with this, both like with the open source, with the proprietary. It's like, I agree, the hype cycle thing is real. It is so real. I feel like we're on the edge of like, it's not just a trough of disillusionment. Mm-hmm. It's like a cliff of disillusionment. Like, I feel like we're teetering on the edge of sometimes.
Oh, the amount of consolidation that's going to happen with like, there's just the crazy amount of funding and AI related startups. Like, there's just no way it's going to sustain. Like, you have this natural collapse that kind of happens. You know, generally there'll be maybe two or three, you know, winners in the market. All the other folks kind of get collapsed in the larger companies. And we've seen this cycle happen so many times. It's fun to watch. It's like, it's when you expect it's easier to like not be surprised when it happens. And I think, you know, one of your roles as a leader is like kind of trying to understand and coach like your teams. You're like, hey, things are booming now, but let me tell you, things are eventually going to, you know, collapse, and we got to prepare for that. We got to budget. We got to plan for that. So it's kind of a fun job that I kind of use it.
All right, Chris, we're talking about AI open source. I think one of the natural topics that comes up from this oftentimes is data and security, really. Like, do you know where your data came from, and is it a secure system? Like, where does your head go when I bring up that topic?
Yeah, like, you know, AI is definitely kind of going through this, let's call it open source, revolution. And, you know, the reason open source is so successful these days and everywhere is because you're able to, you know, use, study, modify, and share it. And through that process, you're able to like figure out, you know, are there potentially security issues? Probably. So you can go fix them really quickly. You know, is there potentially, any sensitivities, around maybe who has access, you know, to make changes in that code, which has a security impact. AI is a little bit unique and a little bit different than software. You know, AI models are built, there's still software packages, but their input involves data from all different, you know, sources. And that data definitely could potentially have issues from, you know, potentially, what license, PI information. There's a whole slew of things you have to be very careful with. And I think what you're kind of seeing currently in the AI, you know, let's call it AI revolution, open source revolution, is people are starting to like document those sources, you know, a lot better. Companies are even like, they know things are so shaky that they're even, indemnifying users of their products from this issue as things get, yeah. You know.
I feel like there's a whole new section of contracts that is developing because of AI.
It's crazy, right? You see in the news, there's like, you know, the New York Times is, you know, suing, folks for, you know, lifting. Like, it's a very, like, there's a lot of kind of litigation. So I think, you know, just like software, you know, I think it's important to know, like, where did it come from? Who's building it? You know, can I potentially make changes? What are my rights? Right. And I think with AI models, the same thing is going to apply with an extra sensitivity around data, because, you know, data is governed a little bit differently than, you know, software, which is mostly copyright, you know, law. Data has a whole other, you know, set of, you know, rules, you know, around it. So yeah, it's to me, it's a very exciting space. And like, I'm always a strong believer that the more transparency you have around, you know, the software or the model, the better it is to kind of find, you know, any issues, you know, like Linus's old law of, you know, the more eyes, you know, out there on code, well, you know, the more, but basically the more eyes are out there, the more bugs will be shallow. So that's kind of the whole thing that I think will also apply to AI.
Well, okay. So let me go back to something you just said a moment ago. You talked about, you know, we were talking about like the funding and the startups. I mean, you did a stint, like, you know, full disclosure, you spent a short time at IBM. You did a little bit, of time. That's where we met. Yeah. And in my first time around here as well, but you also were very entrepreneurial before you really got working for the Linux Foundation, CNCF. Yeah. Like how did that, like how did your open source passion really connect with your entrepreneurial side?
Yeah. So, I mean, like, kudos to, you know, like, you know, when I was at IBM, you know, as part of a program that IBM helped sponsor, you know, a business degree focused on kind of technology commercialization, you know, kind of like an MBA type thing. And I learned a little bit about, hey, here's how business works. Here's like entrepreneurship. I actually, you know, helped try to put together a business plan to try to raise money as part of that program. And so through that, I kind of got the taste of what's, you know, what's possible. Here's how capitalism, you know, works. Here's how entrepreneurship works. And, you know, I finished that degree, which was a little bit, you know, painful because I did it while working full time, which I was trying to recommend.
Yeah. We did the same degree a couple of years apart, I think.
Do not recommend doing the full time thing and working and studying.
Working in grad school is very, very, very hard.
Yeah, my friends, and it's a very tough thing. You kind of have to make some choices, but I don't regret the experience, you know, at all. So that whole, like, you know, I basically, you know, my role with IBM was working on an open source project at the time called Eclipse. And, you know, essentially what we saw working in the open was there's a lot of people that kind of wanted to, you know, build products on it, help manage their development environments. And so I kind of got like the startup bug, you know, with a couple other colleagues to go start a company around essentially what was known as it's kind of was called Eclipse Source, but it's basically the way you can describe it is managing development environments and scale, so you can make sure that your engineers are geared to go from day one. You have consistent settings and so on. Basically, if you're familiar with like GitHub Code Spaces or Gitpod, it's kind of managing developments at a large development scale. So we did that, and it was kind of a fun experience for a while. I do have some kind of funny stories of where I kind of had some coworkers criticize me when I left. In the first few months, we kind of like didn't really have, we're trying to like figure out how to get business. And they're like, so Chris, like you're doing the same thing that you kind of were doing at, you know, your day job at IBM, but you're actually not getting paid for it now. And I'm like, yeah, kind of true. And we did the full bootstrapping route. We didn't, you know, raise, you know, money, and we kind of built a little successful business and ended up, you know, selling that to kind of a smaller, consulting company out there and kind of went on and, spent some time working at, Red Hat and eventually, Twitter, where I learned a lot about, you know, truly, what was cloud native software at the time, what was not called cloud native, but truly how to build distributed systems, at scale, which led me eventually to kind of, joining and building out the Cloud Native Computing Foundation based on that experience.
Yeah. It's like you needed the actual practical pragmatic along with the.
Yeah,
bringing the pragmatic, philosophical, business, all the angles together.
No, totally. And I like until you run and build distributed systems at scale, like across either multiple data centers or cloud, like you have to get your hands ready to truly understand, you know, the problem space. And I was just kind of lucky to be in the right place and right time for that. And you know, Twitter allowed me to kind of share and democratize a lot of that knowledge, because historically that was locked away, not really talked about outside of, you know, research papers.
All right. So I'm going to loop back to one other thing, because you mentioned Red Hat twice now. So another guest on this podcast, Marco Bill Peter, in the, you know, I think one of the things as we develop this podcast is it is such a small world we live in. And Marco and I have been working together for about a year, year and a half now. Turns out you and Marco knew each other from way back in the day, not quite as long as you and I have known each other. And there's a future guest, Eric Wood, who is also like, we all kind of grew up at IBM together and went our separate ways too. But, you know, I asked Marco a specific question and I want to ask you the reverse of it. So just for context, I asked Marco, working for Red Hat, what do you think about foundations, open source foundations? What do you, sitting in a foundation seat, even having worked at an open source company, how do you feel? What do you think about open source companies?
I think we need more open source companies out there. Like the simple, you know, view is, I think open source has this problem where we just have a lot of projects. There's a lot of different ways of potentially sustaining them, right? You know, you could donate, you could join a foundation, you could hire a maintainer. I think entrepreneurship and having more open source companies out there that, you know, both work together, compete, results in better software for, you know, end users and customers out there. So I think we should encourage, you know, more, you know, open source companies out there and kind of encourage folks that have a project. You know, the amount of time I spent kind of like, I do a lot of mentorship, you know, on the side since like I tried to build an open source company. I did build an open source company back in the early days, and it was a fun experience. Learned a lot, had a lovely little, you know, exit, and it was a great path. And that work helped sustain the open source project that I was working on, Eclipse, at the time. If we could do more of that and encourage it, I think the better, you know, that open source will be more sustainable. Like I'm just a pro of, I want to see more open source companies out there.
Yeah. I mean, it's the more eyes, more hands, it just makes, you know, it makes everything a bit better. So.
Yeah. And the competition too, I think, like, you know, competition leads to, like, you know, a little innovation. I think it's just a good, you know, good dynamic, and improves the software too. Like there's the Linus, who's like the creator of Linux, has like this thing called Linus's Law, you know, the more eyes on a thing, like more eyes makes all bugs shallow is kind of his saying. And I think it's true, but it's also, I think the corollary for that for me is, you know, the more eyes and folks that are kind of working open source software, it's not only the bugs that become easier to find and fix, you actually make it more sustainable by kind of allowing more, you know, participation, entrepreneurship.
Yeah, and I it's funny, I've always thought of open source as like the axiom of sunlight's the best disinfectant too, mm-hmm. right? It's mm-hmm. there's nothing hidden, everything's out there. It's, you know, it's beyond democratization as everyone can look. So it's not like, you know, it's not a hacker trying to find something. It's like, well, it's out there. More eyes are going to fix it. Things are going to make it better.
Totally. We're kind of going through some of this same journey. Like I have a fun kind of, you know, I'm on the board of the Open Source Initiative, which recently helped define what open source AI is. And like AI is software, right? But there's a lot of time when you build models, they could be a little bit black boxy. So it's almost like going back to the days of proprietary software. It's like, how do I improve my AI model? How do I see that it's maybe not biased?
Like, what's in this model? Like, I don't exactly know. It's like,
So AI is getting we're in the process of an open source revolution in the AI field right now, which is quite awesome to see.
I think super excited about that from my seat too. So, you know, one of the things, you know, one of the aspects we're trying to talk about in this podcast is the human element. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, you shared is, I think we have a common thing. Our parents have no idea what we do for a living. Mm-hmm. They love us. We say, we know you're successful, but we have no idea what you guys do all day. Yeah. But one thing I think from a human aspect, you know, you shared a story about, you know, open source and your parents, mm-hmm. and what it actually mm-hmm. means. And I think, you know, would you mind sharing that story?
So, you know, I'll preface this where I think my mom is still disappointed that I'm not like a doctor or lawyer at the end of the day, because, you know, when I was growing up, you know, I kind of was in the basement, you know, working and hacking on Linux, trying to develop, you know,
I was the
open source nerd in the basement, just wanting to learn how to make, you know, video games and like hack on Linux. But I learned a lot about how, you know, operating system works, how things are built. Like it's kind of like, for me, it was like growing up, I loved Legos, and this was like digital Legos, and it was like just awesome. So, you know, now, you know, with kind of a little bit more success in, you know, life, my mom has, you know, stopped giving such a hard time of not being a doctor or lawyer, but she still really doesn't understand, you know, kind of the impact of the work. And I had a, you know, discussion with her recently over Thanksgiving, and I'm like, I was like, do you understand that, like, you know, everything that you, you know, like, hey, you just ordered some DoorDash, like, let me kind of walk you through that. Like, the app you use, like, is using open source software. It is back and it's hitting a Kubernetes cluster, which is in the foundation. It's hitting an Envoy, you know, proxy. And, you know, and I tried to kind of just explain it to her, like, hey, you book tickets and, you know, for everything, you go to the Apple, you know, .com and everything. Everything is backed by open source software, and a lot of it is from the foundation that I help, you know, start and run. And then she kind of, like, you know, she kind of gets it, and she, like, she's a little bit proud, but, like, you know, there, I think that's, like, there's this, like, Eastern European disappointment that I'm still not, like, a doctor or a lawyer, but she is proud of, like, the impact and kind of understand it. But it is hard to kind of explain, because it is, the stuff is truly invisible. And I think that some of the successes, all the stuff that we've kind of helped develop is, you know, Linux runs in 99% of computers out there. Kubernetes is in every major, you know, cloud. PyTorch powers the AI revolution. All this stuff is very, very hidden behind the scenes from, like, people that are actually normally using, you know, the software. It's kind of akin to, like, a car. It's like, you know, you turn on the car, it works, but you don't understand all the underpinnings, like, you know, the engine and the software that really runs. And you shouldn't have to, but, like, you know, it's still nice to, like, you know, for your parents to acknowledge that, like, you had a part in building some of the engines and putting things.
Yeah, like, yeah, all this. And I mean, cars is an interesting example, because so many of the cars too are using open source based.
Totally. Yeah. Toyota is, like, running Linux. Like, it's absolutely crazy. There's stuff in Linux and cars and satellites. Like, someone recently told me they put Kubernetes on a satellite. I'm like, oh, I was like, oh gosh, why? Like, okay, cool, awesome.
I was going to say, I have so many questions.
Yeah, exactly.
Chris, thank you so much for your time. Yeah. Aside of our long friendship and grabbing those good whiskeys every once in a while, just thanks for taking time out of your day to join me on the podcast. And, you know, and thanks for sharing some of your personal stories as well.
Yeah, awesome. Happy to do this anytime. It's great to kind of reconnect. I still have, like, very fond memories of my time at IBM, and that's nice to kind of see you back there.
We hope you enjoyed this week's episode of Transformers, and if you did, hope to see you back in a couple weeks. Thank you so much.